Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Today's show is brought to you by Show Dog Prep School. Online courses, webinars, and mentor programs on demand at showdogprepschool.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am thrilled to be joined today by Dr. Diane Brown. She is a board-certified veterinary clinical pathologist, and she is also the chief executive officer and chief scientific officer for the AKC Canine Health Foundation. And Dr. Brown is here to talk to us today about the initiative that CHF is working on, tick-borne diseases. And this is a huge, huge project. And you've listened to other podcasts in the past, possibly Susan Hamill and a few others talking about this, but I'm very excited to talk to Dr. Brown today to get some real specifics. So Diane, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Laura. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Excellent. So ticks, okay, the grossest species on the planet, P.S.
I think everyone would agree.
And so ticks are vectors for some really, really nasty diseases. And some of them we know about, right? Like Lyme's disease and ehrlichiosis and some of this. But your initiative is working on a really broad spectrum. So I would love to hear more about this.
Ah, yes. And we have identified this as a real need and area for research, specifically for the health of dogs. So investing in research on tick-borne diseases specifically for dogs. And we started this initiative in 2016. The AKC has partnered with us in 2016 and 2017 to provide matched funding opportunities, which really helped with the fundraising to drive the research that we're able to do. And these tick-borne diseases, as you mentioned, the list goes on, and it seems that we identify new tick species and new tick-borne diseases every year.
These are zoonotic, right? I mean, these are, most of these diseases get people as well as dogs. So I think that crossover, like, this is about your health as well as your dog's health.
That's absolutely right. It really is a One Health related initiative. So let's take Lyme disease. That's the one that most people know about. It's been remarkable talking to people within the purebred dog world who have had experience with a tick-borne disease, either themselves personally with their own health or with one of their dogs. And these diseases continue to increase in occurrence, I'll say. We're seeing them in different parts of the country. So for example, Lyme disease, we used to think about it only being in the Northeast.
Right.
We now are seeing Lyme disease across multiple parts of the country. And that's probably related to migration of these ticks as well as travel and migration of dogs across regions mm-hmm. and people as well. And some of the important diseases that really can cause serious disease in dogs, Lyme disease, Ehrlichia, you mentioned, Babesia, Patazonosis, Bartonella. And one thing I want to make your listeners aware of is that we are finding more and more cases of co-infections. So let's say you get a diagnosis of Lyme disease in your dog. If they only tested for Lyme disease, they'd be missing that the dog has a second infection.
Right.
And this is something that we've really become aware of. And as a clinical pathologist, I have to tell you, I know that we are missing cases and we need better diagnostics. So we're taking a three-pronged approach to trying to address tick-borne disease in dogs by funding research that's going to improve the diagnosis of what bug is actually there that's making your dog sick, looking for new therapies once a dog becomes infected, and then lastly is how do we prevent the dog from becoming infected. So we're funding studies across these three general areas, and these investments are crucial to making progress in this area. So this really is going to be a multi-year initiative. It's not, okay, we do an initiative 1 year and we're done.
Yeah, right, we found it all.
Yeah, so this continues and will continue for years to come with the support of our donors.
I think that is really amazing. And I know this is a relatively brand new initiative. I get that, but I'm so excited to hear if there's been any kind of anything coming from it just yet. Are you getting any preliminary ideas?
We are. We've had already some publications in this area.
Great.
Since 2013, more than $650,000 has been invested in research in tick-borne diseases, specifically for dogs. And that goes from information on where ticks are actually living and hiding. So there's some publications that have come out now from this research that indicate these ticks can live in your home.
Yeah.
You can be completely unaware of that. That's key. There's also where they co-locate. In addition, we had a nice study that was done looking at the correlation between platelet counts and tick-borne diseases, and also looking at the association of tick-borne disease with immune-mediated hemolytic anemia.
Yeah.
So already we're seeing some results of this funding.
Wow. And I think that that is really incredible. And the thought that there's a tick crawling around here in my office right this minute is going to make my hair catch on fire. But I think that it's so critical that we as a purebred dog fancy understand that this is out here. And I wonder about any input that you can provide on the balance between I don't want to over-medicate and dump chemicals into my dog, but I have to protect my dog from these horrible, creepy creatures.
Yeah, there really is one key recommendation at this point. And that is to use tick preventives. And there are multiple options out there now. What may be best for your dog is different from another breed. And so you need to talk specifically with your own veterinarian. It could be focused on your region of the country, what diseases are being seen, what ticks are being seen, what's the most effective preventive. But there are a number of products to consider. And they have been well tested in general. And again, there are some breed specific issues, so it's important to talk to your veterinarian. But I can tell you that the preventives are key to keeping your dog healthy, especially if you're going to have them out competing in the field. Or, you know, let's be honest, you can have the small breed dog who spends their time on your lap or being carried around, but they're eventually going to get down and walk around in the grass. So everybody's at risk. And I commend the parent clubs because we have had a broad range of support for this initiative from the small dogs to the largest. And everyone realizes how important these tick-borne diseases are. I mean, you can even get a tick in the house, as we said, and gain an infection that way. So it is important to use proper prevention through the appropriate months of the year for your geographical region.
Sure, absolutely. And you were talking a little bit earlier, the three pieces, the diagnostic, the therapies, the prevention. And I think that it's been very interesting, some of the little bits that I've talked to other people on previous podcasts. Some of the new diseases that are coming to light, whether it's a different kind of tick or what it is, can you speak to that a little bit? Because that to me is fascinating and a little bit terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we have known about some of these diseases for a while, mostly have focused on the bacterial and rickettsial organisms, but there now has been an increased awareness of viruses that are spread by ticks as well. And part of the focus on improving diagnostics is making use of all of the new advances in molecular medicine and molecular diagnostics. So we are working on investing in sequencing diagnostic platforms that could identify organisms that we didn't even previously know were there. So not only is it testing for the known ones, the Lyme, the Ehrlichia, all the different species that come in with different types of species of Bartonella, for example, or the different Ehrlichias. So in addition to that is identifying new organisms with unique signatures that we may not even have known existed.
Wow. And that's what the funding and the research is looking at right now.
That's right. We've had some significant investment in doing this type of sequencing for the actual organisms, for the actual microorganisms that are potentially causing disease, and trying to get a greater spectrum of identification of what's actually there. And another key area of investment is to identify the mechanisms that happen within the body with tick-borne diseases, trying to find immunological targets that could then be addressed with novel treatments. So immunotherapies or vaccines or other ways that we might be able to get the host or the dog not to become sick when they get infected. So these are some really novel, outside-the-box ways of looking at this.
Absolutely.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer, so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-section.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they? And then the deductible. And those deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in for your monthly payment. And those range from $0 to $1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
Do you have any, I mean, I know this, a lot of this is still preliminary on this type of thing, but do you have anything like a, for example, right? Like one specific thing that you can say, we found this and ew, icky.
I think that one of the key organisms of interest that has been underdiagnosed is Bartonella. And our keynote speaker last year at our National Parent Club Canine Health Conference was Dr. Ed Breitschwart from North Carolina State, who has really led the field internationally and has had significant funding from AKC Canine Health Foundation to work on Bartonella. And there are multiple Bartonella organisms. So it's not like you say, oh, Lyme disease, it's one disease. Bartonella, we're finding, and he has done a lot of this research to identify that there are multiple types of Bartonellas and how are each of them behaving differently. and how is this impacting the system of the dog? This organism, Bartonella, gets into the blood vessels in humans and in dogs and can cause an inflammation in the heart, so an endocarditis type of disease. What if that is the early trigger that leads to further development of ongoing chronic inflammation in the blood vessels, potentially leading to the development of cancer? So that's one of our current big funding grants, is with Dr. Bryde Schwartz looking at Bartonella in association with hemangiosarcoma. Hemangiosarcoma is a cancer of the blood vessels. This is a new way to look at this, perhaps a little controversial, but on the other hand, there's a lot of impetus for driving the research in this direction, and this is going to be a big area of investigation for us.
Absolutely fascinating. I'm sorry, I'm still kind of gobsmacked, but, you know, it's very interesting because they talk about so many I personally have an autoimmune disease, so I follow some of these things. They talk about in human research that a virus could be what's triggering some of these. So think of all the potential. It's just fascinating.
Well, and to think that, you know, the ticks carry viruses, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So there's much to be done,
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So, and just to touch on your third platform you were talking about, which is therapies. So anything that's starting to kind of bubble up on ways that we can treat these dogs, you know, I mean, how many dogs that we know that even with Lyme's disease that are never the same, or people that lose a dog to anaplasmosis, or, you know, some of these kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're looking especially at chronic infections and how the body's responding to those and how could they best be treated. Mm-hmm. So as you are aware, with immune-mediated diseases, steroids are often a first-line defensive treatment. Mm-hmm. You know, dog comes in, has arthritis, or has, you know, any number of other what appear to be inflammatory conditions, even immune-mediated hemolytic anemia, right?
Right.
Well, steroids are immunosuppressive. And if you aren't aware, for example, that an animal has, again, let's use Bartonellosis as an example, and you give them this blast of steroids for their immune-mediated disease, you can actually exacerbate the infection then.
Yeah.
So, again, I guess it all really does circle back to getting the right diagnosis. And you've got to be aware of that before you implement treatment. So the publication on the association between tick-borne disease and immune-mediated hemolytic anemia, for example, is really key, because if your dog goes in and has this acute hemolytic anemic crisis, it should always be noted that it's important to test for tick-borne diseases in those cases.
Before you start slamming them with steroids.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the current outcomes, you know, with some actual data-driven findings.
Right.
As opposed to anecdotes, yeah.
Right. This is, like, legitimately fascinating. And it takes me back to when they were breaking out the dog DNA, right? And then they were able to take that and apply that to people. And I just think it's so powerful, and people really need to understand at a basic level that so much of the research and study that goes into what makes our dogs healthier has tremendous impact on us as people.
That's true. And, you know, there are people who like to talk about dogs as a model for human disease. Well, given that my primary focus is the health of the dog, I prefer to flip-flop it and say, hey, how do we use humans as our model for disease and take what has been invested in human health research and apply it to dogs? And we're starting to see that by investing in the funding that we are, that we can implement some of what we've learned from the human-animal model.
Wow. See, now that's genius right there, I'm telling you. So talk to us a little bit and help people understand. Canine Health Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit. It is happy to accept donations from, and you mentioned earlier, parent clubs, but individuals, anybody who wants to support this type of initiative.
That's exactly right. And we rely on our donors and our partners, and they come from across the spectrum of people who love dogs. people from the parent clubs who are incredible people who care so much about their breed. The dog-loving public, the general public, also is interested in this. Partnerships that we have with organizations such as the American Kennel Club, partnerships we have with Purina, Elanco Animal Health, you know, they invest in research. And there's a reason that they come to the AKC Canine Health Foundation with that funding, because they know we have fiscal responsibility, transparency, and we can demonstrate that this funding is going to research that will meet our mission to advance the health of dogs.
And 94 cents out of every single dollar actually goes to research, not to overhead and administration.
Correct. So we have a 6% fundraising efficiency, which gets us the highest score in that category on Charity Navigator, which is really the gold standard for measuring charities and how their funds are used. And that's a number that we're very proud of. We are very efficient. We benefit greatly from the support that we receive from the American Kennel Club and the people that are involved in the sport, as well as really from all of our donors. And it's key. If we want this work to be done, and we want it to be done in a credible, peer-reviewed manner, with research that's going to provide measurable outcomes that will stand up to the test of scientific rigor and time, then this is the investment that you make. This is the choice you make to contribute to this foundation, because we can demonstrate that.
Absolutely. And I wanted to touch just briefly on one other sort of aspect of this tick-borne disease initiative that we're talking about, and that is how applicable it is to our dogs out in the field going hunting, and also the sort of cross-purpose of looking at why are these ticks migrating, right? Is there some application within climate change? And I don't know, there's a lot of pieces there.
Yeah, and there's a real good resource, the CDC, that shows the range of the different tick vectors that cause disease. And these maps seem to change on a yearly basis that demonstrate the increased range of these different ticks to parts of the country that we haven't seen before. So let's take the Gulf Coast tick, for example. It used to be seen only in Texas and the Gulf Coast region. And we are seeing that they're tracking actual occurrences of these ticks in different parts of the country, and it's moving up the East Coast. The Lyme disease vectors and the prevalence of Lyme disease in humans, again, we can see that change because so much more is invested in those types of numbers and tracking of disease in humans.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, the dogs share our lives. They're with us. They're in our homes. And if we track what's happening in people, a lot of it follows that it also will track with dogs. So there is climate change that is allowing for these vectors that used to say in certain parts of the country that were warm and moist. Well, there's much more of the different regions of the country now that are warm and moist. So climate change is accounting for part of this migration. So is the travel of dogs. So whether that's importation of dogs internationally that are either coming in by choice, I guess I'll say, or dogs that are coming in as part of the retail rescue, there just is this migration of vectors, and that it comes with that, the disease follows.
Right. And I just think that that's scary to watch. You know, I really appreciate your time, Diane. This has been a fascinating topic of conversation. And listeners, if you've enjoyed this particular one, you should check out Dr. Diane's commentary on the Theriogenology initiative that CHF is working on. And also, we'll have another visit with Diane about the epilepsy initiative. And I think there's a lot of really powerful work and information that Canine Health Foundation is doing, and you guys need to hear about it.
Well, thanks, Laura. This is a topic that's been near and dear to my heart for years, and I'm thrilled that we're being able to make the investment in these diseases and understanding them and working for better health for all dogs. And I appreciate your time and appreciate the time of your listeners.
Excellent. We will talk to you soon. All right, listeners, welcome back. We are here with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. Hey, Allison.
Hey, Laura. How are you?
Spectacular.
Excellent.
So we are talking today about ears and tails.
Yes. So many times I have people talk to me and I'll be showing like a Cavalier or another Spaniel or even my poodle. And they'll say, oh, but your dog's ears are just like so full and thick and mine are just like thin and I can never get enough body in them. And I'll say like, how do you bath and dry them or what shampoo do you use or anything? And they're telling me and I'm like, all right, so you dry it with a pin brush. And they're like, no, I use a slicker brush because it, and I'm like, oh, so as much as we love our slicker brushes, they get every little last hair completely pinned, bone straight. And just like some slicker brushes can be just very, very good at smoothing the hair and making it look perfect. They are going to take out a little bit more hair than a pin brush. So if you're doing that over and over and over again, you're taking out a little bit more hair every single time. And then on top of that, the ears and the tails of our dog seem to take a lot of damage, right? Like they're the ones that are going head first into things or the tail's getting dragged along behind, et cetera, et cetera. My rule is for any dog that I'm showing is that I only use a pin brush to dry and or brush them if I'm brushing them at a show. And I'll use it to dry them until the tail or the ears are 95% dry. Then for the last 5% of the drying, I will use a slicker just to get that really awesome, beautiful finish. But I also pretend that every hair that's in that slicker I have to eat when I'm done, right? Because that gives me incentive to be very, very careful because I don't want to eat dog hair voluntarily.
Yucky.
So even when I'm brushing, and you're going to notice within 6 weeks of just using a pin brush, but you will notice the big difference in the thickness to the hair on the ears and on the tail. So those setters, those poodles, those spaniels, whatever it is, do yourself a favor. Pin brush, 95% of the time. Slicker brush, very, very gently. Like you have to eat every hair in that brush for only 5%.
Excellent tip of the week. Thank you, Allison. And listeners, don't forget Allison Foley's Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. And this is now available by subscription as well as to purchase individual courses. Is that right, Allison?
Correct, Laura.
Excellent. And listeners, when you put in Pure Dog Talk 25, you get a 25% discount off your course. So have coffee on us.
Yeah, we'd love to have you.
Excellent. Thank you, Allison.
Thanks, Laura.
And now a quick tip from our friends at American Dog Fancier. ADF is begging you, please do not use an unflattering photo of your dog, no matter how high the award. ADF can easily insert a great picture of your dog with the judge at no extra charge. Design is always included in the cost of your ad at American Dog Fanciers. Affordable show dog advertising. Mention Pure Dog Talk and get 10% off your first ad with American Dog Fancier. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the Dog Show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.